Grace to you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. My name is Dr. John Diamond. This is the show, America Unhinged, where we are fervently patriotic and unapologetically Christian. If you're watching us live, then you are watching us on Brighteon TV. What I would ask you to share that platform. We are live every morning, 9 to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, with occasional guest hosts. And then we are also carried over on Conservative Television of America as a replay later on. So we've got a number of great hosts. We've got people coming and going, a lot of great voices. And I would encourage you, please, to share Brighteon TV with anybody that you know, because we are trying to give you the alternate news. We're trying to bring the experts in that CNN and Fox and others will not, because they all have an agenda. And I guess we all probably have some type of agenda, but the journalism is about truth. It's just putting the truth out and let it be discussed and debated. So that's what we're going to do again today. We'll be right back after this break.
Riots, recession, food prices, gas prices, violation of our liberties. These issues are keeping Americans awake at night. Sleepless nights aren't good for your health. Millions are suffering from sleep gap disorder. I'm Dr. Steve Hodson, and I have a natural solution to overcome this dreaded sleep gap disorder, my proprietary sleep formula. One capsule of sleep formula will help you achieve a great night's sleep for as little as 75 cents per night. Visit our website, physicianspreferencevitamins.com, and enter the promo code SLEEPNOW. It's hard to stand up against tyranny when you're tired. Pray for our country and get a good night's sleep.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build the quietest suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer? Is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Welcome back to America Unhinged. We are in the middle of Cornwall Alliance Week. If you've been with us Monday and Tuesday already, we've had some great Calvin Beissner, who was the director of that. We've had David LaGates, who was with us yesterday. And we actually have a special because we got them both on today for you. So this is going to be a great show. I've been reading up on the declaration that they have written, really informative and educational, not just a declaration, but for those of us who maybe not see things according to a kind of a biblical worldview or a Christian worldview outside our church. It's a very nice document. We're going to talk about that today. Before we get started, I do want to remind you, Dr. Alan Keyes is available for speaking engagements. So if you would like Dr. Keyes to come and speak at your church or your pro-life or patriotic function, then reach out there at imtv.us and we will take care of that for you. I'd also encourage you to go to Acts 529.com and sign that declaration. informing the government that they are not God, that God is God, and we are simply stewards of his creation. And then I do want to remind you that Coach Dave Dobemeyer is having a medical and legal truth summit down in the Cincinnati area. It's actually Northern Kentucky. And you can, it's March 24th and 25th. You see it on the screen, number of great speakers there. And you can go to CoachDaveLive.com and register and learn more about that there. I will be speaking this Saturday and Sunday in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the Legacy Faith Church. You can visit, there's the website, LegacyFaithChurch.com, and click on events. And you can see me there, right there. I'll be speaking to the men's ministry Saturday morning. And then again, I'll be speaking to the entire congregation on Sunday morning. Ought to be a great event. Great church, great pastor. Look really forward to taking my family out there. So let me just jump into our scripture verse today. And really is key to pretty much everything that we do in this universe. And that's Genesis 1:28. And God said, God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. He says, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. This right here is central to everything that we do in this, not only in this country, but really in the earth, that there is a creator, that God has made us stewards over many, many things. Our families, our money, our time, government, science, the earth. We are stewards. I was looking up Webster's 1828 dictionary because I love using that one because it's not been altered, you know, by others. And it just says a steward is a man employed in great families to manage the domestic concerns of someone else. And that's why we're here. That's what we are tasked with. Now, if you've been following me today, we're talking about environment and climate and things of that nature. But if you've followed any of my teachings on government, this is what our founding fathers understood, is we were simply just stewards of a government. And that's what Romans 13 really teaches when you understand that. It's not saying that government has a blank check to do whatever it wants, whenever it wants. All right. That God puts people in charge to be a steward of his kingdom. I want to read just a very small portion of the higher law speech. I don't know if you've ever read the higher law speech of 1850. William Henry Seward, who ended up being Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State, he said this about government and being the stewards of government. He said, there's a higher law than the Constitution, which regulates our authority over the domain and devotes it to the same noble purposes. The territory is a part, no inconsiderable part, of the common heritage of mankind bestowed upon them by the creator of the universe. We are his stewards and must so discharge our trust as to secure the highest attainable degree of their happiness. So, This is when I, you know, when the church says, oh, we shouldn't be involved in politics or government or policy or anything else. No, we are stewards of his creation, and we should be maximizing that anyway. Again, the church is supposed to be the head and not the tail, and we've become the tail and not the head, right? We've been wagged by people who don't know Christ, people who are spiritually blind, people who have no biblical worldview, you know, and we're letting them lead us around by the nose. And I think COVID was a clear, very clear example of that. So back with us today is Calvin Beisner from the Cornwall Alliance. And then we're also going to bring our good friend David LeGates back on. So Calvin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, John. It's great to be back with you and really appreciate your giving Cornwall Alliance 5 straight days on your program. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to reach out and bring the insights of this network of evangelical Christian scholars to lots more people. So thank you.
Yeah, well, that's what Fox and CNN does, right? They bring on their experts to push their agenda. And, you know, we just think everybody should have equal opportunity. And since, you know, CNN and Fox probably aren't going to call you up and ask you for a lot of biblical stewardship advice, that's why we want to give you the platform. So you've been on for the last 2 days. If someone hasn't watched for the last 2 days, just give us a brief intro on to you.
Well, myself personally, I'm the president of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. I came to this position through years of teaching and writing in a combination of theology and ethics and political philosophy and economics. especially focused on environmental stewardship. And the Cornwall Alliance, we started back in 2005, and we're a network of just under 70 different evangelical scholars. About a third of them are natural scientists, and about a third are economists, and about a third are theologians, philosophers, ethicists, and ministry leaders. And excuse me. And we have as our mission to educate the public and policymakers on biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the very poor around the world, and the gospel of Jesus Christ. Those first two parts of our mission, biblical earth stewardship and economic development for the poor, deserve a little bit of unpacking. In terms of biblical earth stewardship, we see this as an alternative to environmentalism, because most environmentalism is rooted in anti-Christian worldview and very frequently uses pretty poor science and economics. Doesn't really accurately describe what's happening in the world around us, and all too often the policies that it promotes to try to supposedly protect the natural world don't really do that very well, but are very harmful to people. The second area of our mission is educating about economic development for the poor. And we see five social institutions as indispensable to that. The first is property rights, private property rights. And then after that, we get entrepreneurship, free trade, limited government, and the rule of law. And then we also recognize an absolutely indispensable material or physical condition, and that is access to abundant, affordable, reliable energy, 24/7, 365. Because energy is defined in physics as the capacity to do work. And work is what we need to do everything. I mean, just even to lift my arm requires energy. So making food, clothing, shelter, providing good transportation, communication, medical care, education, everything requires energy. So the more energy we can have, and the less expensive it is, and the more reliable it is, the more we can make. All of those things that deliver mankind from what Thomas Hobbes described as life solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short, into life that is flourishing, in which we have wonderful relationships with many neighbors, we have health, we have long life, and so on. So those things are indispensable. But really, in order to come to all of those things, we need to be reconciled to God. Because if we're not reconciled to God, if we're not thinking God's thoughts after him, if we are not embracing his truth, we're not going to use the world the way he intended it to be used, and therefore we will be frustrated in so many ways. So the gospel, the good news, is that sinners like me can be reconciled to the holy God by faith in Jesus Christ, who lived the perfect righteous life in my place, and who died the sacrificial death, atoning for sin, paying my penalty, my debt for sin. And God, by his grace, free grace, I don't earn a thing, gives me faith in Jesus Christ. When I repent of my sins and I trust in Jesus Christ, I'm reconciled to God. And then I can begin to learn to live the way he wants me to use the world the way he wants me to. And we can see wonderful flourishing for myself and for those in whose lives I have some influence. So that's basically it.
Well, those are all just very, very noble purposes. I didn't realize that you had 70 of you. I mean, I knew you had some, you know, economists and climatologists, environmental specialists, theologians. I didn't realize it was that extensive. Would you consider yourself, I guess, what the people call what a think tank? Is that kind of what you were?
Yeah, that's probably an accurate description of us. We're not out there, you know, cleaning the streets or you know, cleaning up trash on a beach, although some of us do that very kind of thing. Some of us work in industry that deals with environmental problems. Some of us work in education and so on. But yeah, we are basically a think tank. We want to get good ideas out there that help people to embrace sound policies instead of unsound policies.
a biblical worldview think tank, you know, that deals with environmentalism and, you know, the environment stuff. I mean, I think we probably need a biblical worldview think tank for, you know, politics too. I know there's some conservative think tanks, but I don't know that they actually see things the way that we do. Well, you're bringing David back on the program today. Would you like to introduce him for us?
Well, I'll make a real brief one, and then I'll ask him to fill in a bit more. But Dr. David LeGates is our Director of Research and Development, Research and Education at the Cornwall Alliance. He joined us right about a year ago, about a year and a month ago, after retiring from the University of Delaware, long career teaching climatology and geography there. And he's one of the really leading thinkers in the field. He's an author or co-author of 149, I believe it is, refereed journal articles on climate and climate science and the like. So we're really blessed to have him. And I'll let him fill in a bit more of his own background for you and tell about his own role in Cornwall.
Great. Welcome back, David. Glad to have you on the show again today.
Thanks, Cal. Thanks, John. Yeah, it's as I said, See, that pretty much sums up everything that I've done recently. I was at the University of Oklahoma for almost a decade. I was at Louisiana State University for a bit, sabbatical leave at the University of Virginia. I worked briefly in the Trump administration, both at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as well as in the White House. I could go on and on. That's probably more than you need to know.
Yeah, let me ask you this question, since this is something I've dealt with before, but you can kind of give firsthand testimony. We know most of our educational systems are basically anti-Christ, anti-biblical, and, you know, they call us science deniers and everything else. What would you say your experience was, you know, like at these, you know, these universities? Were did you find a lot of people that kind of agreed with you from a biblical worldview? Was there a lot of antagonistic arguing? Give us your experience on that.
Yeah, the biblical worldview does not really exist in most universities, particularly today. I think everything was fine up until about maybe 10, 12 years ago. And then it became much more antagonistic. It was one of the reasons I decided to leave the University of Delaware is it just became too much of a woke university, too much interested in the non-good parts of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there was a sort of a retirement bailout that was just too good to take, too good to pass up. So I decided to take it and get out and start working with Cornwall Alliance, which has been an enjoyable and rewarding experience.
Yeah, and that's great. And I'm glad you said that, because that's kind of the assessment I had. But again, you know, having that firsthand testimony, I've been kind of anti-evolution, you know, ever since I became a Christian, because I realized evolution was just a theory that really just intended to put doubt in people's minds about the existence of God. And really, doubt's the only thing that can destroy faith. If you look at, you know, Jesus and Peter walking on the water, I mean, Peter was walking on the water by faith, and then all of a sudden he started to doubt, and then he started to sink. So, I mean, as a theologian, I tell people, you know, doubt is the one thing the enemy's going to try to put into your head, because it's the only thing that can really negate your faith. And you know, people kind of understand it when you explain it like that. There was a movie, and I don't know if you guys seen it. Ben Stein did a movie called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, clear back in 2008. And I've showed it several times at our church. But I mean, they were saying kind of what you were saying there, David. He had professors on, he had journalists on. I mean, people who basically took the biblical worldview and even mentioned creation science was just flat out destroyed. I mean, they were denied tenure, their careers, their journalistic careers, their academic careers were all destroyed. And yeah, I mean, you getting out probably in the nick of time is probably a good thing, because again, all our public institutions, whether it's public schools, which I call the devil's youth group, or higher learning, higher institution, has not just become really atheistic, but very, very hostile and, you know, antagonistic against people of faith.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, David, I mean, John, David is being way too humble, too, because he not only works for the Cornwall Alliance, but he's also involved with the Science and Environmental Policy Project. He's involved with the CO2 Coalition. He's involved with the Caesar Rodney Institute there in Delaware. So he's a guy who is very, very generous with his time and his expertise, and he's really been a tremendous help to us. As far as what you've been saying about education is concerned, the vast majority of education, K through 12, all of college, graduate school, is now totally dominated by a naturalistic worldview. Matter and energy and motion is all that exists. There is no God, and therefore there are no binding absolute moral values. And so the whole thing is just destructive to the Christian faith. David has experienced what it is to be in higher academia, where, frankly, if you don't embrace that, your life is made miserable by colleagues who do. So I think it's very important that Christians think outside the box, and that we also develop increasing alternatives to such situations. David has been a leader in that kind of academic endeavor.
Yeah, and that is something that I have said, you know, for years, even in the realm of media. We need to, you know, they don't want us in their sandbox anymore. That's fine. We'll come out and start our own sandbox. And, you know, the more people they kick out, the bigger our crowd's going to get, right? So, I mean, they're going to understand that. But, yeah, to formulate, you know, these types of Christian universities and types of teaching, this is stuff that we need. I mean, this is what Harvard and Yale and William and Mary, and that's what all these institutions were at the beginning of America, mm-hmm. and now they've all been taken over. And now, you know, David, let me ask you this. What is your thoughts about, you know, creating other types of institutions that share our biblical worldview for everything? Politics, faith, environment. What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's going to be difficult to do, particularly because there's a lot of different viewpoints, even within the Christian community. I know there's a couple of Christian schools that are not amenable to discussing climate change in the characteristic that we do.
Right.
Climate change in particular, you know, still has to be one of these things that we've got to launch onto. And I've seen a lot of faculty tell me, you know, I agree with you on climate change, but I'm afraid to speak out because I know what happens. I've seen it happen to you. I've seen it happen to others. I just would prefer to go along to get along and play the game. And I think there's a lot of that, particularly in Christian circles as well, that we just don't need to bring on as much attacks if we can get away with it. And that's why I don't think bringing on a new a paradigm that does everything we think it's going to do will actually ever happen.
Yeah, and I mean, you find that everywhere. You find that with the woke movement and the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, everything, you know. I mean, these things have all seeped into a lot of these so-called even Christian universities. And it really is, and I'm just going to tell you as a theologian, it's just you want to be like the world, and we want to be liked by the world. So we want to fit in. We want everyone to like us. And, you know, so we're just going to conform to them, where Romans says, do not be conformed to the world. You know, we're the ones that are supposed to be conforming. I mean, if you go back and you read Martin Luther King's letter to the Birmingham jail, I mean, he makes a great illustration between a thermometer and a thermostat, right? A thermometer just takes the temperature. A thermostat actually changes everything. And that's what Christianity is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a change agent, you know, from light to, from darkness to light, and from lies to truth. So I identify and compliment you on that type of environment you had to be in for so many years. Fortunately, Cal brought you on, and now you're in an organization that is really a lot more like-minded, and you can speak the truth in love and not have to worry about that type of persecution.
That's right. And so a major thing that we're doing is to challenge the sort of popular paradigm about climate change, because that really has become the cause célèbre among environmentalists, and it's become the excuse for huge changes in our political institutions, in our economic manners of production and distribution and so on. Climate change really is becoming the excuse for a complete revamping of human life on Earth. And it's a revamping that, frankly, is going to be very, very dangerous to human well-being, because the fundamental thing that the climate change advocates want is for us to get away from what provides about 85% of all the energy that we use in the world, and that is hydrocarbon fuels, sometimes called fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. They blame those for global warming. Now, David is the climatologist who can explain why that kind of blame is not justified. And we really are concerned that the popular thinking on this is going to push billions of people back into poverty and trap a couple of billion people in the poverty that they're already experiencing. And frankly, because poverty is a far greater risk to human health and well-being than anything related to climate, it just doesn't make sense to do that. We can protect ourselves from anything that climate can throw at us if we have the wealth that abundant, affordable, reliable energy provides. If we don't, we can't.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And we're going to, when we come back on segment two here, we're going to talk about the Cornwall Declaration on Environmental Stewardship, because that's a very, very good document, very deep. And when we come back, we're going to allow you guys to really just take the helm and just talk about this declaration, how it came to be, you know, who has signed it. I see we got a list of notable signers on there. So we'll be right back after this break.
Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the Bivy Stick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the Bivy Stick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 Bivy Sticks that will be available in America this year. Get yours now while they're still available at SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com. If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. We offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater, and our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com.
Welcome back to America Unhinged. We are in the middle of Cornwall Alliance Week. I do want to remind you, go to my website there, AmericaUnhingedRadio.com. Please download that free ebook, An Appeal to Heaven, A Cry for Divine Justice. It's kind of my theological treatise on government and government from a biblical worldview from Genesis to Revelation, and really how our founding fathers understood it, I guess, more than anything. I do want to explain to you, though, why this show exists and Brighteon exists, because when people disagree on very, very important issues, it's the job of the media to give both people the airwaves. Now, we see that's not happening. COVID, environment, they're only interviewing their people and the people that'll push their narrative. One of the things when I've studied some journalism was I found an apology for printers, which was put out by Ben Franklin in 1731. You're talking almost a half a century before the Declaration of Independence. And he says this: Printers are educated in the belief that when men differ in opinions, both sides ought to equally have the advantage of being heard by the public. And when truth and error have fair play, the former is always an overmatch for the latter. And that's what I try to do on this show. But since Fox and CNN are not going to give the gentleman I have on with me, you know, they're not going to be real journalists and give people the equal fair play. That's why we have them on. So coming back with Dr. Calvin Beisner, and he is with the Cornwall Alliance. And what we're going to be talking about in this segment is their Cornwall Declaration on an Environmental Stewardship. Calvin, welcome back.
Thanks very much, John. Yeah, the Cornwall Declaration is just a simple two-page document, basic statement of principles. And it came about out of a meeting of about 35 scholars on environmental stewardship, Protestant, Roman Catholic, Jewish, evangelical and mainline Protestant, all gathered together to talk through these issues for about 3 days. And we had no particular agenda, just to share thoughts. And at the end of that period, several of us thought, golly, we really had some good ideas in there. We should put together just a two-page simple statement of principles out of that. So we did. And then we shared it around all of those who had gathered together, and bit by bit, it got edited back and forth and finally came to its final version. And one of the things that we did was we then shared that with many, many other leaders in religious organizations around the United States and the world. Within just a couple of months, we had over 1,500 endorsements for it. Some of the more notable people who'd be recognizable to your audience, most likely a largely evangelical Protestant audience, would include Chuck Colson and Jim Dobson and D. James Kennedy, Dr. Marvin Alasky, the editor-in-chief of World Magazine, and other such people. But we also had a lot of lesser-known people, but people with particular expertise on environmental stewardship, like Dr. Thomas Sigurd Durr, a professor at Smith College, or Dr. P.J. Hill, the George F. Bennett Chair of Economics at Wheaton College, who specialized in environmental thought. And so this was a document that quickly gained significant credibility around the world, and I think it states some basic principles really pretty well. And staying on those basic principles is often a very important thing to do. It's easy to get down into the weeds, so to speak, in talking about the environment. And sometimes just staying basic clarifies things a lot. And then you realize, if I'm going to get down in the weeds, I have to have started from here, and that's going to guide how I think down in the weeds.
So, yeah, that's great. David, do we want to bring David on to talk about the particulars?
Let's do that. Yeah, David is one of the signers of the Cornwall Declaration, and he's certainly got great insights.
Well, let me read you the preamble, and I think that sets the stage for the rest of the discussion. The document starts off by saying, the past millennium has brought unprecedented improvements in human health, nutrition, and life expectancy, especially among those most blessed by political and economic liberty and the advances in science and technology. At the dawn of a new millennium, the opportunity exists to build on these advances and to extend them to more of the Earth's people. At the same time, many are concerned that liberty, science, and technology are more a threat to the environment than a blessing to humanity and nature. Out of shared reverence for God and his creation and love for our neighbors, we Jews, Catholics, and Protestants, speaking for ourselves and not officially on behalf of our respective communities, are joined by others of goodwill and committed to justice and compassion, unite in this declaration of our common concerns, beliefs, and aspirations. And then we go on to talk about our concerns that we have, our beliefs that back these up, and our aspirations that we look forward to. So let me hand it back to you, Cal, and say, let's start with a discussion of what are our concerns about the environmental stewardship.
Yeah, and we could go into more depth on these, but of course, time is pretty limited. So I'm gonna just try to walk through a couple of the first few to give some examples. One of them is that many people mistakenly view humans as principally consumers and polluters rather than producers and stewards. Consequently, they ignore our potential as bearers of God's image to add to the Earth's abundance and not to poison the planet while we're at it. So that's the first concern. The second one is that many people believe that nature knows best, or that the Earth, untouched by human hands, is the ideal. That kind of romanticism leads some to deify nature or oppose human dominion over creation. Our position, informed by biblical revelation and confirmed by reason and experience, views human stewardship that unlocks the potential in creation for all the Earth's inhabitants as good. In other words, we don't think nature is best untouched by human hands. We think nature is best subdued and ruled by human beings as they learn to follow God's instructions out of His Word in Holy Scripture. A third one is that while some environmental concerns are well-founded and serious, others are without foundation or greatly exaggerated. Some well-founded ones focus on human health problems in the developing world arising from inadequate sanitation, widespread use of primitive biomass fuels like wood and dung, primitive agricultural, industrial, and commercial practices, distorted resource consumption patterns, and all sorts of things like that. Now, some of the unfounded or undue concerns seem really to dominate most of the environmentalist movement. They're not really focusing on those well-founded concerns. But these differ in the following ways from those well-founded concerns. The well-founded ones are proven and well understood, while the latter tend to be highly speculative. The well-founded ones are often localized. They're fairly narrow in geographical scope, while the latter are said to be global and cataclysmic in scope. One of the results of that is that, of course, it becomes really difficult for ordinary people to do any testing and thinking about that because, hey, you can't go to Antarctica and to Greenland or to sub-Saharan Africa and all of these different places. Most of us can't do that. And so it's really difficult to get a grasp on these things. The well-founded concerns are of concern to people in developing nations especially. Well, the latter are of concern mainly to environmentalists and wealthy nations. You know, if you're worried about putting food on the table, clothes on the back, and a roof over the head, you don't really care very much about ozone depletion, climate change, even such things as smog. There are much more serious problems facing you than that. Then finally, the well-founded concerns tend to have solutions that are cost-effective and that maintain proven benefit, while solutions to these not so well-founded concerns tend to be unjustifiably costly and really of dubious benefit. So what we urge through the Cornwall Declaration is that public policies to combat exaggerated risks can dangerously delay or even reverse the economic development necessary to improve not only human life, but also human stewardship of the environment. And the poor, who are most often citizens of developing nations, are often forced to suffer longer in poverty with its attendant high rates of malnutrition, disease, mortality as a consequence. And so they're often the most injured by those misguided, even if well-intentioned, policies. And then, David, I'd throw it back to you. You can take us down through some of the beliefs that underlie our thought here.
Yeah, when I talk about the biblical perspective of environmental stewardship, one of the things I first want to point out is, what are our guiding principles? In other words, when we start talking about biblical stewardship, what is the background for it? And the background for it in this case is Matthew 22, 36 to 40. And in that passage, we see that the Pharisees have approached Christ, and one of them asks him, which is the greatest commandment in the law? as if to set up a hierarchy. So, you know, maybe Dante's Inferno or something like that, that there's a hierarchy of commandments that thou shalt not break and those things. But Christ didn't fall for that. He just simply said, there are two main commandments. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Upon these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. And so that's our point, is to in everything give glory to God and then care for your neighbor as yourself. So in particular, what we want to do is first set God where he should be. And so our beliefs are that God is the creator of all things. He rules over all and deserves our worship and adoration. The secondly is the earth and all its cosmos reveals creator's wisdom and is sustained and governed by his power and loving kindness. Number three, men and women were created in the image of God and were given a privileged place among all the creatures. Number four, God's law is which written in the human heart, thus revealing his own righteous character. The human person represents God's design for peace and the supreme rule of all conduct. Number five, by disobeying God's law and creating sin, humankind brought on itself moral and physical corruption, as well as a divine condemnation in the form of a curse on the earth. Number six is God in his mercy has not abandoned sinful people or created order, but has acted throughout history to restore men and women to fellowship with him and through their stewardship to enhance the beauty and the fertility of the earth. And finally, number seven, human beings are called to be fruitful, to bring forth good things from the earth, to join with God in making provision for our temporal well-being and to enhance the beauty and fruitfulness of the rest of the earth, as is commanded to us in Genesis 1:28. So these are our basic beliefs, which follow traditional Judeo-Christian heritage, and we therefore, our aspirations follow directly from the beliefs that we've set forward. And we've, as Cal said, we've got a number of people that have signed on to these beliefs as being their own as well. And so our aspirations would be next, and I'll pass it back to you, Cal, to talk about where we think humans and creation, in a sense, should be taking us.
Yeah, and of course, these aspirations all depend really on the furthering of the gospel of Jesus Christ, because we won't reach these unless we are reconciled to God and learn to love him, to follow his law, and to use the world the way he intends us to do it. But this is a quick list of aspirations. We want a world in which human beings care wisely and humbly for all creatures, but first and foremost, for their fellow human beings, recognizing their proper place in the created order. Humans alone are made in the image of God, and we are given dominion over the earth. So we have a hierarchy. God first, humans second, the rest of creation third. We aspire to a world in which objective moral principles, not personal prejudices, guide moral action. And all too often in the environmental movement, you get subjectivity instead of real objectivity. We aspire to a world in which right reason, including sound theology and the careful use of scientific methods, guides the stewardship of human and ecological relationships. In terms of the climate change debate, there has been a serious undermining of logic and scientific method by those who think that climate change driven by human activity is a catastrophic threat, an existential threat. None of that can be sustained by proper scientific method. We aspire to a world in which liberty as a condition of moral action is preferred over government-initiated management of the environment as a means to common goals. We're not going to see real improvement through strict government control over people's lives. And we aspire to a world in which the relationships between stewardship and private property are fully appreciated. That's important because, frankly, what is viewed as common property, what is viewed as government-owned, et cetera, tends not to be taken care of nearly as well as what is owned by specific individuals. This is why you find graffiti on public bathroom walls and not on your bathroom wall at home, right? So private property rights are very important, but much of the environmental movement really wants to abolish private property rights and make everything common. We aspire to a world in which widespread economic freedom, which is integral to private market economies, makes sound ecological stewardship available to ever greater numbers of people. And finally, we aspire to a world in which advancements in agriculture, industry, and commerce not only minimize pollution and transform most waste products into efficiently used resources, but also improve the material conditions of life for people everywhere. So that's kind of the gist of it. And the result of all of that should be a firmer grasp of what's really happening in the world around us. And we challenge many of the assumptions of the environmentalist movement precisely because they diverge from those beliefs that David went over, from the aspirations that just that I just went over, and from the concerns that we expressed in the Cornwall Declaration. And then after the Cornwall Declaration, which actually came about in 2000, it was made public, it was about 5 years later that we started the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. And we have tried then on the basis of that foundation to build an understanding of what it means to be good stewards of the earth, what it means to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and everything that moves on the face of the earth. That is Genesis 1:28. And we kind of crystallize that by saying it means men and women made in God's image working lovingly together to enhance the fruitfulness and the beauty and the safety of the earth to the glory of God and to the benefit of our neighbors, so that we are addressing those two great commandments, to love God and to love neighbor.
And when I read your beliefs, again, as a theologian, that's something that I just soaked up. You know, I mean, that's just something. I mean, it's so articulate. It's so succinct. It's so concise. Man, you guys are saying things in that document, especially in the belief part of it, that oftentimes I don't even hear coming out of the mouth of pastors. We don't hear coming out of pulpits. And I think we need to have that. Again, we started off, Cal, the very first day talking about the whole counsel of God's word. You know, I think we've become so New Testament focused that we've lost, you know, the idea of the creation and the creator and what it was originally created like and what we're supposed to be doing now. I was just thinking of some scripture verses. And when I teach Romans, you know, it is really a creationist document. The book of Romans, chapter 1 says, since the creation of the world, his indivisible attributes are seen. You get to verse 8:19, the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. 8:22, we know the whole creation has been groaning as in birth pangs up to this present time. So,
absolutely.
To carry that Genesis creation idea over into the New Testament is really something I think the church has really lacked, not only just from the understanding of the Creator and what happened at the fall and what God has put in place to rectify that, but again, then the stewardship of it all, too.
Yeah, and I think there's, unfortunately, I mean, obviously, where each one of us is going to spend eternity is extremely important, right? The gospel of Christ is the central message of Christians. But we need to look at more, too, because the Bible does. So in that same book, Romans, in chapter 8, we see that Paul says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, by God, by the way, not willingly, and the creation didn't like this, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And Paul goes on. I mean, so we should be concerned not just about our individual salvation and so on, but about the extent of the work of Christ to restore all of creation and indeed to make it better than it was when it was first made. That's where we're headed, and that's what the Cornwall Alliance is dedicated to helping people understand.
Yeah, and again, Romans is not just about the redemption of man. It's about the redemption of everything that fell. You know, during the garden, the cursed is the ground for your sake. So that's kind of what Romans brings out. Not only does God want to reconcile man and redeem man and restore us back to the image that we originally created, but he has the same plan for the earth. And that's what's so important. Gentlemen, we got about a minute left. I do want to just let Cal talk just for a minute about Timothy Terrell, who we're going to have on the show tomorrow.
Yeah. Dr. Timothy Terrell is a professor of economics at Wofford College, specializes in environmental economics, did his PhD in environmental regulatory economics. And we're going to be talking about a new push by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to restrict the use of coal to generate electricity by restricting mercury emissions. And there are a lot of fears about that. And Dr. Terrell has shown why those fears are not justified. So we're going to go into that. This is an important thing because it could really harm a lot of people.
Yeah, and this is why we want to bring these experts on, because again, this is stuff that's way, way above my head. It's not my field of specialty. So to be able to give you guys a platform for you to speak this truth is a blessing for me. Appreciate having you both on the program, and everybody else, we will see you tomorrow. God bless.